Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Mise en Place Season 2. And today we are joined by an absolute legend of the industry, David Wolanski, founder of Chicken Sours, amongst many other things. David, we're about to order from your incredible menu. We're sat, I should say, in the sunshine.
Beautiful day.
There's a wonderful vibe up and about. And we're about to order off your menu. What should we be going for? Ben, you're eyeing up a couple of things, I'm sure.
I am, actually, yeah.
Szechuan aubergine.
Yes.
Mm. Chicken toast.
Yeah.
Which, like it says on the menu.
Like prawn toast,
but nice. Chicken. And we're going to go for some wings, because our disco wings are banging. So we're going to go for Kung Pao wings.
Nice.
And then we're going to have a bit of light and fresh pickled watermelon salad.
Delicious.
Coriander, mint, chili, peanuts, and then some bang bang cucumbers.
Talk us through, like, how Chicken Sours came about. We're going to go back in time after that. But, like, the kind of food you're doing here is elevated. It's not your normal fried chicken.
No, it's not. And we never wanted it to be the same as anyone else. Anything that we do, we wanted to stand out from the crowd. Like, all of our sides, you'll see a kind of light, fresh, zingy. There's no deep friedness going on. We've got the sour cocktails that kind of cut through the richness of the fried chicken.
Yeah.
But everything else is a bit of a nice little surprise that you wouldn't expect in the chicken shop. But that comes from Carl's culinary background.
Did it start with one chicken thing?
One single chicken.
But you know, like, was so no, like, there's now like five or six. Was there one that you were like, this is different gear, we yep. need to like roll with this? And
absolutely, it did actually. There was, when we had our first menu when we opened in Haggerston, Carl developed the menu with a friend of ours called Ash Mayer.
Those Chef the Professionals.
He was Marsh.
Yeah, there you go.
Shout out to
2000
Ash.
And something or other. And together they were a great team, and they came up with a fantastic menu. But we always wanted to keep it really concise and tight. It was always about having a small menu. So it was the K-pop was the first sandwich we did. We just had one sandwich at the time. It was the K-pop fried chicken sandwich. And we had wings, just hot wings or sticky wings. And then we had the house fry. It was going to be the house fry and the guest fry. So the house fry was just our classic fried chicken with our seaweed crack seasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was always going to be a guest fry, which is the house fry with no seaweed crack with a nice glaze on it. And then that was kind of it. Thinking back some of the menus, we made our own curd at one point for a salad. We were hanging it.
That's dedication.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There was one salad on there which had about 35 moves on it.
But you should say Carl is a serious chef. I mean, give us a bit of his background pre-meeting you. Like, he was serious. Well, not that he's not serious after meeting you.
No,
he's even more serious.
Carl had a very strong culinary background, working in Michelin style restaurants. He worked for Marco. He worked for Mark Hicks. He worked for Lord and Lady Bamford. I think he was head chef for U2 for Bono at his hotel at the Clarence in Dublin.
Really?
He set up Harvey Nichols in Istanbul. Yeah, he's got a very strong culinary background. Very, very, very
creative. I remember when you guys
chef.
Launched, like, all the like the hype was about the fact that he was this DJ that could cook this like mad cool food.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is clever.
He's super.
But I didn't know about all this kind of like.
Yeah, he's super creative.
Legit stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's super creative, but with a properly trained background.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Did you ever work with Marco or not?
I worked with Marco at Lescargo. That was my first
job.
Oh,
go on. Tell us about him. Well, how insane, how crazy.
Well, one story was when I was doing all the jobs there and learning to be a manager in restaurants. And he came in one day with his big hat, shoved it in my chest and said, I want to sit on table 21 for, don't know what table number it was. And I said, well, there's guests sitting on there. Don't give a shit. Move them. Like, right, that goes against everything I believe about hospitality. Didn't give a shit. We had to move the guest and he went and sat down there.
That was your first dive into the food world then, post-uni?
I did hospitality business management at uni.
And then Cafe Soho, tell us about that.
Cafe Soho was the dream. It was my first business that I ran with a friend of mine called Mark. And we bought an existing sandwich bar off a lovely old couple called Pat and Lou. How I remember that.
Shout
I can't remember
Pat
what I
Lee.
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can't remember what I did
guys.
Yesterday, but I can remember Pat and Lou. And yeah, we took it over and it was brilliant. It was down a little side road in Soho. We get in there early every morning, prep everything from scratch, and get ready for our lunch rush, loads of regulars. It was brilliant because we had such a loyal customer base and you'd see people out and about in the streets. And you're like, oh, I know you, Turkey Emmental Watercress. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even like, I remember being at Notting Hill Carnival at Norman Jay, good times, seeing up a tree. And there's like someone down there going, oh yeah, look, Cafe Soho bloke.
It's great.
Great times.
Yes.
But serious sandwiches. I mean, we're obviously with Ben Benton here, who wrote two best-selling recipe books on sandwiches with Max Halley.
Yes.
But did you guys have any actual like bestsellers or gravitas or rewards?
Every day we had a special sandwich that we'd create. So that was good because you get your creative juices flowing.
Yeah, yeah.
But we actually won the British Sandwich Association
Innovative
Sandwich of the Year Award.
That's serious. You've got nowhere near that.
I've never won an award for anything, no.
That's unbelievable. What was it?
Rare roast beef, horseradish mayo, Emmental cheese, coleslaw, and dill pickle.
Delicious.
Fucking dill pickle. You were ahead of the time with the pickles, man.
That's my background.
That's your, that's
I've seen a lot of kimchi on the menu here.
Yeah,
we love
anything pickled, fermented.
Mate, yeah.
Got a shout out to our friends at Eaten Alive. Do you know the...
Serious gear.
Glenn and Pat used to work with us and work with Carl in some of our previous incarnations of pop-ups and also at Chicken Sours. Yeah, and then they went off and started Eaten Alive and we used their kimchi here.
Some of the best... fermented stuff.
Like you go see them and they'll be like, come here, you've got to see this. Buried this turnip 4 months. Yeah. You've got to come and check it out. Like, it's very, very good stuff they do.
That's what I want to talk about, though. Those sort of first early versions of what's basically turned out to be Chicken Sours in many ways. Those little pop-ups you're doing. I mean, you were doing fucking crazy things, right? Yeah. Take us through. This was sort of 2010.
Pop-up wasn't a word.
No.
Yeah. It was just, we just created these dining experiences. So we met at Latitude Festival, came back.
Sober or not?
I was working.
Okay.
Carl potentially was. We were working for Jonathan Downey at the time, so it was all a bit dubious.
Yeah.
But we'd set up a restaurant for him and Carl jumped in on the pass. He wasn't meant to be working. He was just there meeting JD and he rescued the head chef off the pass. He's like, right, I got this. Right, check on. And I was expediting on the other side and then we just hit it off like a house on fire and then came up with the idea for Disco Bistro, which was going to be a one-stop shop for your night out. You come in, have a few drinks, have some canapes or whatever, some small plates, sit down, have a little munch, and then move all the tables and turn it into a club.
Get on it, yeah.
That's
so
not
we realised that you needed millions of pounds to do something like that.
Right.
So we just did smaller versions, basically. I think the first one we did was Rock Lobster, which was in Shoreditch. There's a shop called Lunar and Curious, and they had a little side bit just down the road from where you were, Rochelle Canteen, just on that road there. We did a pop-up lobster roll bar called Rock Lobster. We just came up with random ideas and kind of executed them. Then there was God Save the Clam. No, before that there was English Laundrette, which basically Thomas Keller was coming over and doing the French laundry in Harrods for like 500 quid. And we're like, fuck that, let's do the English Laundrette for 50 quid. And Carl created an incredible menu of kind of nostalgic British classics. Yeah. We even like went and foraged for pineapple weed in Hampstead Heath or Kew, I can't remember. We had a Lily Vanilli pushing a trolley around with her desserts.
Oh,
that was back in the day. And then we did God Save the Clam, which was a clam bake, which I don't know why we did a clam bake because none of us knew anything
just
about
a great
clam
name.
Bake. Yeah, we got loads of green eggs on a rooftop overlooking London Fields. And like Don Letts was DJing, John Kahuna was DJing, Kizzy was DJing, I think, as well. And it was just great vibes on this rooftop over the Queen's Jubilee weekend.
So much hype.
Yeah, it was just...
It's amazing.
Apparently Pierre Kaufman comes and eats your chicken.
He did. Back in the day, we were closed between lunch and dinner just to keep up with the prep. And we'd obviously gone off somewhere and we got a phone call from someone saying, Richard Vines is on his way down with Pierre Kaufman. We're like, don't be stupid. Like,
yeah, that's
Jeremy
insane.
Beadle coming out.
Yeah.
And so we ran back to the restaurant, opened it up and... Yeah, they came and sat at the bar and ate our food and there was a whole article about it, why three Michelin star chef loves East London Fried Chicken Shack in Bloomberg. And
that is unbelievable.
It was great and Carl's built a good friendship with him and he'd been very supportive.
Do you have any other celeb guests or celeb regulars, I should say?
We do. Who comes in here? Well, one of my faves, Mike Skinner.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, he's...
Has it come to this? Yeah.
Very quick.
He's a great guy.
Pleased with that.
Yeah, I'm happy. Yeah.
But we also had a big takeaway order one day from Usher.
Really?
About Usher there.
Yeah.
So it was, I think it was the first day we started doing takeaway in Haggerston. It was a Friday night. I don't know
why. You've been waiting.
But literally.
He's like, the boys are over. Let's go.
They phoned. Yeah. So someone phoned and said, I'd like to place a takeaway order. I'm like, all excited because we just started takeaway. Yeah. Like, I have 13 of this, 15 of that. I'm like, no chance. The restaurant was
stacked. Finish it, yeah.
The restaurant was stacked. So it was Friday night. So I was like, no, sorry. We have to maybe wait till after service. So this limo pulls up. This little runner gets out. Sits at the bar, says, I've been told I have to get your fried chicken. So he just waited till the end of service. And we got it out of him who it was for. It was for Ashley, who was in the recording studio, and he'd been told he had to have our fried chicken.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the food has arrived. Ben, maybe we should move you out, move that table in. So what have we got? Take us through what we've got.
So we've got Szechuan aubergine. Do we want the side plates or are we just diving in?
We can dive in, mate.
So start with Szechuan aubergine. And it's like a tempura style batter, but it's not a xanthan. Should we lime it? Yeah, give it a little lime, cut through the richness of the lime.
Can we get some content of this?
What's this one?
That is chicken toast.
That's the chicken toast.
Bang bang cucumbers.
Bang bang cucumbers.
So chicken toast is essentially prawn toast with chicken, right?
Exactly, like a chicken mousse. Took Carl and Ash about a year to develop.
Fuck, that's insane.
So the cucumbers over here, we smash the shit out of them. Break them up. Smash the shit out of them. Salt them overnight to draw out all the moisture. Yeah, and then you've got these lovely kind of like little raggedy edges. And we make what we call a strange flavour sauce. And we coat it in there. And then that means it permeates through the cucumber. So if you just slice, you go to a lot of places. And you get really tasty cucumber. Don't get any of the sauce because it's 90% water. So as soon as you put the sauce in, it just slides off.
Yeah.
So we make all these nice crackly bits and then sprinkle it with bang bang shizzle.
In many ways, is it quite sad that you're hiding behind a chicken and sour's name?
What, behind fried chicken?
Because you're creating fucking incredible things here. I mean, I've tried two dishes so far and they're fucking exceptional.
Why did you try that one? Try the chicken toast.
But do you know what I mean?
I do, but what I liked about it was back in the day in Haggerston when we first opened, people would come in dubious. Oh, what's this?
Oh, wow.
Come in like, oh, hello. Don't know what this is all about. And then they'd leave like, fuck me, that was amazing. High-fiving chicken sour's tattoo on their arm. Like, cause we give with all the bills. And that's what you want to do. You want to under-promise and over-deliver rather than the world has been changed this way to be the complete opposite because of social media.
So good. What's just arrived? We've just had another delivery from...
Kung Pao Wings. So get stuck in with those.
Oh. Looks so good.
So when we first opened, we didn't actually want to have any cutlery.
Right.
Just wanted people to just pick it all up with your fingers and just get stuck in, make a mess. And we used to give out wet wipes. But we used to give out... For years, we gave out Huggies. We just put a table... We used to put a packet of Huggies on the table because when we first opened, we're like... Shit, people need wet wipes or something. Haven't got anything. Rush to the little Turkish shop next door. I'm like, oh shit, they got Huggies. Let's get some Huggies. And then we ended up like buying on Amazon like huge volumes of like Disney themed Huggies. We had frozen ones for years or Winnie the Pooh.
Huggies are insane. I want to talk about Haggerston though, because like, obviously we're now sat in this incredible street eating the most delicious food. I mean, it's fucking insane. But the other shop is a bit more rough and ready. I can imagine it's seen some slightly more crazy affairs than this one in terms of lock-ins late nights. A bit like Max's Sandwich Shop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've got a basement as well, which not that many people know about, which we
hire
whatever anyone wants. Yeah, anything goes down there.
Well, you've been there 10 years now, right?
Yeah, we'll be 10 years in May. Yeah, exactly. And it's...
You having a party?
I'm sure we'll do something special. Nice. Yeah, looking forward to that.
But you were saying about Camberwell Arms, like 10 years, you then become a London establishment. You become like a serious part of the furniture of the city. Incredible achievement.
It's been a journey.
Yeah.
You know, especially what we've gone through in terms of COVID.
COVID in the middle, yeah.
How bad was COVID?
Can't say COVID was great. No. But COVID was really good for the business because we just extricated ourselves from working with investors and we had a little period where we had investment in chicken sours and it didn't really work out. And we became independent again. So we had time, and it was just before COVID, we had time to unravel all the things that they'd done, reconnect with our people and our community. And we'd never been more profitable.
Really?
It was weird because we started launching Deliveroo.
Yeah.
And we were doing huge volume. We were doing like 30 grand a week in that little restaurant on Deliveroo.
Mental.
Yeah, with no customers in there, just a team in there, having a great time.
You guys are obviously doing the best chicken in London, but who is in second place? Sorry, Ben has just gone in.
I'm just waiting for Ben to eat that. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That pickled watermelon
salad. What have you gone in for?
Pickled watermelon salad.
Pickled watermelon salad looks insane.
Try that.
Can I just say that fucking Szechuan aubergine dish is possibly the greatest dish ever had.
Fantastic.
With some watermelon.
Oh, mate, will do.
Fresh you up.
So who do I think is doing great
and
fried chicken?
And who's fucking shit?
There's a lot of fucking shit.
Yeah.
I think with fried chicken inside, they're really good or really shit. There's not much middle ground.
That's
and you have to, it's funny, a lot of people say, have you seen this one opening? Have you seen that one opening? I'm like, that's cool. When they start opening more, that's where the challenge starts.
Yeah.
You know, to do fried chicken well on volume is extremely hard and labor intensive and so many permutations that could go wrong. But I think who does fried chicken really well? The wings of Smoky Go are obviously really good. On the Bab.
On the Bab,
a little Korean place. We used to go to the one in Old Street.
Yeah.
I used to love their fried chicken. I'm sure, I haven't been, but I'm sure the guys at Fowl are... their fried chicken, considering that's their concept.
Is that disgusting?
I don't know.
Ugh.
No, they're good.
I hear you.
But I actually want to just actually, it's quite a good time. So on Mise en Place, we get people to send in questions.
Go for it.
And we got a question from a chef who, it's more of a rant. I said you could send rants or questions or whatever. Fucking.
What are we dealing with here? Just anyway. Freddy gets it.
Get that tender. Stick it into the sriracha sour cream. What a dunk. Beautiful.
Oh.
A guy called Henry. And he was working Sessions Art Club.
Okay. Meant to be a beautiful dining room.
He says the fact that restaurants can survive on hype now, they can disappoint guests and then not care about if they come back or not. Because there's so many more people chomping at the bit to get through the door. This results in lazy dishes, less care, poor seasoning, and arrogant rushed dishes. This feels like my experience of eating out in London more and more lately. Examples, Mountain, Devonshire, Bouchon Racine. I've had some relatively good... I've had some relatively good and also some incredibly disappointing and in some cases borderline embarrassing food at all of the above.
The food industry now is driven on hype.
Yeah.
I keep saying... Right now, what's annoying is you don't need to be good to be successful.
Yeah.
And that's really disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what drove us, what drives us. Yeah. Be the best that you can. But you don't need to. There's a place down the road that's got fucking queues all the time, yeah? And
it. Go on. What is it?
I think it's called Apple Butter, yeah?
Right,
okay. Oh, I've seen that around the corner, yeah.
And I'm like, what is it?
What are you
doing? I think they came up with a creme brulee latte. Basically a latte, put loads of sugar on it and burn it. And because you can get your crack.
Yeah.
So it looks good on TikTok.
You get your TikTok moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you don't need to have that skill anymore to be successful. You see a few restaurants out there that they're just built up on TikTok.
Yeah.
You know, but how long can that last? There's restaurants, but there's also kind of food story places. You look at that place in Camden, I don't know if you've come across it, called Funky Chips.
Oh, yeah.
We fucking buy chips, frozen chips, buy bought in sauces, toss them. Yeah, so have a massive portion for £12 and the queues are ridiculous.
And is that all based on TikTok?
Only based on TikTok.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. But restaurant-wise, the Devonshire have done an amazing job.
Yeah.
Do you like the food there? Have you eaten there?
I've eaten there and I had a very nice meal.
Yeah.
I had a very pleasant meal. It wasn't. Yeah. It didn't blow my mind. No. The bread was delicious. I thought everything I had was really nice, but it's not like...
The level of hype, it shouldn't...
Yeah. Where do you like to eat?
Like, I like to eat a Kiln. I like to eat a Koya. Yeah. I like to eat at... Oren on Shacklewell Lane.
Yeah,
shout him out. That was Ben Lepet's favourite place when he came on.
I heard that. And I was like, oh, he must have copied me from my top job.
Yeah.
But
the Jerusalem mixed grill pizza thing looks amazing.
Yeah, Jerusalem mixed grill. Yeah.
So I said the food here is fucking banging. It's
unbelievable. It's outrageous, isn't it?
I like simple things. I love going to Dusty Knuckle.
Mm. Yeah.
I think when I go for lunch, their food is just so super tasty, and I take so much care about it. Dumpling Shack.
Dumpling Shack.
You know, I love going to them and having Dan noodles. I love Asian food.
I was speaking to a guy, do you know Singular Films? He's like a food filmmaker on Instagram.
Singular Films? Oh, no, yeah. I have to check it out.
He's brilliant. And he was saying, like, a lot of the restaurants he's filming at now have got rid of their PR companies. They've just had enough. Where do you stand on that?
I kind of agree. PR, in its old sense of the world, is gone. Because what did you need a PR for? Back in the day, you needed someone to get you into 6 broadsheet newspapers. Mm. And you're basically paying for someone's relationship with the people who are writing there to get them into your restaurant. Mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate. We had an amazing PR called Hannah Norris from Nourish PR. She's awesome. But in the end, the world changes. You know, I think now you don't need to be written about in a newspaper. How many people read a newspaper?
No.
You know, you don't. You don't.
RIP the Evening Standard.
Yeah. Who cares what? Not who cares what Jay Rayner has to say or Giles Cohen.
But it's not driving people into places.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, right now is that guy Eating with Todd who can shift the dial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, really massively. And I've seen it. Like, we had a stall at Winter Wonderland and a friend of ours, Will, had a dish that he had on the year before. Didn't really sell as much. Then Eating with Todd came down, did a piece on it. Sales went through the roof.
Talking about Winter Wonderland, like, what is the, you know, we were speaking about earlier off camera or off mic in this instance, what is the model of, like, your truck? Because you've got an incredible food truck. But I can imagine Winter Wonderland are quite harsh negotiators, are they? Of all the festivals you do?
Well, most events, in reality, the reason why customers feel things are so expensive is because commissions are so high, so the operators have to put their prices up so much.
Yeah.
But you have to have a model that you need to, you can make work with those commissions.
Really?
Yeah, and they range from, I would say, 25% of your turnover at the lowest.
The lowest?
The lowest. And a lot are exceeding 30%.
Really?
Now. Yeah.
Which, but like, that's because delivery is like, what, 30%, 31%?
Yeah, we've been on with them a while. I think if you go on it now, you're going to be paying those sorts of those sorts of numbers.
It's a big chunk,
Heritage
isn't it?
Brands who have been on there for a long time are.
You get a bit slightly better treatment.
Lower, like near the 20s.
Okay, nice.
But first of all, you can make good cash in a day, right?
Yeah, it's crazy the volumes you can do. We can do in a weekend what the restaurants can do in a week.
Really, yeah.
Easy.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely, easily. You've got. You think about it, you've got a queue. You can have a queue all day long.
Yeah.
Whereas you're in a restaurant and you're here.
And you've got the perfect food for it as well.
It works well. We could go quick. We've got great sources. We've got a great team. And we've honed that model.
Yeah.
To be able... What you need to make a success in festivals and events, you need to have a great product. You need to be able to go quickly. Yeah. And you need to be able to... get people to enjoy it, obviously.
Yeah.
So that, but that comes down to the product. But you need to be able to go quick. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do the volume in the peak times.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we worked out that we used to have just one person on the till. This is quite interesting. We had one person on the till, and we could do up to £1,800 an hour in sales. And I never thought to put another person on the till because I thought, well, we've got the queue. No one's going anywhere. We just carry on like that. And then I read something somewhere. If you open more tills, you can do more. It just doesn't make sense. Tried it, nearly doubled our turnover.
Really?
So the kitchen can keep up?
You need to add another person in the kitchen.
Right, yeah.
But you easily cover their costs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you add another person in the kitchen in a certain spot. Yeah. You have sections and it works really well. And you put another person on the till, bang, you can go up to nearly £3,000.
Where can we find the van this summer?
The van is going
to... it's all over the place.
Where can't you, mate?
What are the...
So we are at some of our faves, Lost Village, All Points East, British Summertime... we've just come back from a nice gig at Blenheim Palace.
Nice.
We were at a big festival. We were at a festival called Tramlines. We were at one over in Wales recently, one down in Brighton. It's interesting because you rock up and you're like, okay, is this... It's always a risk at a festival.
Yeah.
You know, and I drove into this festival and I was like, we did the first one of the year. It was in Brighton. And I'm like, all the red flags. Okay,
really?
All the cars were like young kids' first cars.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Fiestas or whatever. Just
probably
like
getting stoned though.
What's that?
They'll probably get stoned, get hungry.
Well,
could have got some coffee.
There's also a camping festival, but only 10% of the people were camping.
Oh, fuck.
So it's a daytime festival. They're probably going to think, well, why am I going to stay and spend this money on that when I can just go and get something afterwards?
Yeah.
And everyone was off their tits.
Well, you got to take into consideration what drugs they're doing, right?
Exactly.
Because if they're on the beak at the Mandy early doors, they ain't touching the chicken.
No. But some people do.
What I mean? You want to do a reggae festival?
Yeah. City Splash was great, but all the ones down in Brockwell Park were brilliant.
Yeah.
But they're also really good festivals, like Project Six. And
I saw you there, Lambeth County. Were you there?
Lambeth County Show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, it's a great vibe down at Mighty Hoopla.
Yeah, yeah. What a good weekend that was.
The whole of London descends on there with like loads of glitter and massive smiles. Yeah. It's good fun.
Apart from the trucks, what else do we have to look forward to? I mean, would you think about opening another physical site, or is that just not worthwhile?
Not on the agenda right now. I think the way that the events and festivals are going, they're great. The restaurants, managing restaurants right now, as I'm sure you know, is so challenging.
Tough,
on so many levels. And managing the people side of things, and rents are going up, and everything's going up. So I think if I was to open another restaurant, I don't think it would be a chicken sales restaurant. I think I love what we've got. You know, I do get that hankering to open like a small little place.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
I wouldn't do it. My wife would kill me. But I'd actually like to do it with her.
Is she involved in this at all?
Yeah, she's our head of people. Emma's amazing. And she looks after all of our staff and makes sure they're super well looked after. And she's great front of house.
Yeah.
She'd be brilliant. And I'd love to actually, I'm not a chef, but I love cooking. I'd love to have a little place where I could go in the kitchen and cook.
Yeah.
And she'd be running it. Fun.
Well, sort of daily chalkboard, changing menu.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love just getting creative with what we've got.
Yeah.
But the dream is, once the kids are off, we get a camper van and drive around, stick a surfboard on the top, drive around.
Yeah.
Cook.
Awesome.
Out the back of it. I was thinking yesterday or the other day, it was evolving. We were just going to cook for ourselves and maybe do a big dish every night and then help cover our course, and people just come, locals come and enjoy it.
Unbelievable idea.
Yeah, just sit and enjoy it that way.
Sign me up.
That's definitely the way
nice.
I got into Emma, was into her heart.
Yeah.
Was food.
Cooking.
Yeah.
What did you go for it first off?
Well, we went on a date to Kenwood. It was a gig, like a
like who was it? Amp Fiddler. Don't you remember Amp Fiddler was a what? Music artist. Went to see Amp Fiddler at Kenwood and made a banging picnic.
Yeah.
Which, I even did Parma ham, yeah, stuffed with like a herb cream cheese and tied it with chives.
Oh, that's dedication.
Ball of move.
Yeah.
And then chocolate dip strawberries.
That's like Panzers kind of shit. Yeah. Even better than Panzers, probably.
Yeah.
Actually, shout out to Panzers. We love you. We want to know about your plate peeves. What pisses you off? I mean, we've heard a couple of things.
3 anchovies, loads of olive oil, 17 quid.
Yeah. That's a very good shout, actually.
We need to get your go-to Hall of Fame restaurant and the dish which you sort of put to that restaurant.
The iconic Hall of Fame restaurant.
Yeah, we've got a couple
in
there already.
Hall of Fame restaurant or Hall of Fame dish?
Start with the restaurant.
We got to.
Do they have to come from the same place, Freddie?
Yeah, ideally, yeah. Because otherwise, that's ridiculous.
Well, I just
so I think Hall of Fame makes it sound super grand, but I think
we should work on the name. Is what
where do you go back to? Where do I go back to time and time again? And have the same dish?
Yes.
I go to Kiln and get their stir fry Cornish greens with soy. And it's a simple dish, but it's probably my favourite dish in London.
You made fried chicken sexy in the city. What about, just to finish off, pizzas now becoming sexy? What are your thoughts on that?
They are. And we had an amazing pizza recently. We went to Gracie's.
Mm.
And not only, not only are they the loveliest people.
So sweet.
Their pizza was phenomenal. I really want to try crisp. It looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
But it's just such a commitment.
It is.
Palaver, isn't it?
But you got to put like a month out. It's like booking a flight for a holiday.
Exactly. And that's quite far from me. So you've got
to go. So far.
You got to go. You got to make sure you're going to get it. And if
what you'd have to do is do it on a special. You know, everyone mentions a couple of restaurants which are really special to them. River Cafe always comes up to a lot of the chefs we talk to. So maybe if you had like a big anniversary coming up, you go to Chris for like an early pizza lunch, maybe midday,
and then into River
Cafe. Sit in the Crab Tree on the river for like 5 hours. Get really pissed. Actually, you don't want to rock up to the river, get really pissed.
No, you want to be pissed, but you'll just hold it down.
Yeah, yeah, just like get quietly pissed.
The only people who know who's pissed are you and your other half.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then just person. Sit in the little terrace of the River Cafe and order a £65 starter.
Yeah, tomato.
You've thought about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, well, the River Cafe have just launched the River Cafe Cafe.
The River Cafe Cafe, I've seen that.
Have
yeah.
What's
so it's
the River Cafe Cafe.
Yeah, it's the River Cafe in the sort of office-y building bit, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can do like little bits of River Cafe food, but
yeah, scale
maybe
down.
Marginally.
What do they call it? Their diffusion line.
Diffusion line, yeah, exactly.
Well, David, you've been out soon saying thank you so much for giving me your time. Your
restaurant
chance. Chicken Sours is just fucking unbelievable. That food is so, so, so good. We're going to finish off by asking if you could save one of your items off the menu.
Oh.
What would you save?
Oh, it'll be a big fight between the K-pop and the Szechuan aubergine because they've been on the menu since day one.
Yeah.
We're now nine years later.
Amazing.
That moment when you invent the Szechuan aubergine, do you get like turned on? Like you must do in a way because you go like, fuck, we've just done something incredible here.
Well, thankfully, I get to just enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's Ash and Carl created it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you put it in your mouth, you're like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
These little clouds.
Yeah, yeah.
Funnily enough, Ash doesn't even like aubergine.
Crazy. Neither do I normally, and that's fucking insane.
And we get a lot of people who say, oh, I don't like aubergine. I say, you know what?
Have a go on it.
Try it. Yeah.
If you don't like it, I'll take it off the bill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Never taking it off the bill.
No.
So
for that reason, you know what? Szechuan aubergine is going to be the one.
Magic.
Well, David, you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Please leave a rating, and we'll see you all next week.
Amen.
Nice one.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My life in the sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get down in the sunshine. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Sunshine.
Yeah.
Folks get brown in the sunshine.